welcome to Sports Talk with Tonsoni, the Indiana Baseball Edition. I'm your host, Brian Tonsoni, and along with Chris Feeney, Josh Bennett, Cassidy Palmer, and Carl James, we will be bringing you information on Indiana baseball. Hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. I am your host, Brian Tonsoni. The regular season is over. Big Ten tournament is over, and NCAA postseason play is here. The Indiana Hoosiers are playing in the postseason NCAA version for the fifth time in 6 years. This is and has been a great stretch of baseball over those years, so let's get started with the show. Last week was the Big Ten tournament. Game one, Indiana lost to Illinois 7-1, an outstanding performance by Jonathan Stever, until a couple of key errors gave Illinois a 3-0 lead, and they finished it off rather well, 7-1. Game two was a win for the Hoosiers, beating Michigan State 6-5 on an awesome comeback, including a down-to-the-last-out three-run homer, and then to win it in the next inning 6-5 to stay alive in the Big Ten tournament. Game three, unfortunately, was another loss to Illinois 5-4 in walk-off fashion. A better played ball game overall, but a loss nonetheless, knocking us out of the tournament before the semifinal action. Overall, kind of a 50-50 type of a tournament. But we are in the NCAA tournament, and we will talk a little bit more about the Big Ten and also coming up the NCAA preview. Our regular Hoosier highlights segment this week will focus on the Big Ten tourney. Guys and gals, what are your thoughts on the IU performance this past week, and do you think it has any impact on the NCAA? We'll start with you, Josh.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. It was a little disappointing. We'd won the last six coming into the tourney after a bit of a tough stretch, and basically were a two-out, three-run home run in the ninth inning away from being two and out. I kind of hope that that after that, that would get some momentum going. And then we lost a tough one the next day. But you know what they say in baseball, momentum is only as good as tomorrow's starting pitcher. We've got a guy going in the opener that pitched six innings last Friday, like you talked about in the recap, didn't give up an earned run. This team has shown an ability to be streaky all season, both good and bad. But we have a seven-game win streak, four-game win streak, nine-game win streak, six-game win streak, all this season, and it only takes three to win a regional. So I think they're more than capable, and I don't think they'll have a problem switching the flip or flipping the switch.
I agree with you. The key thing there is to win. You don't have to win as many games in the regional. We're going to send it to Cassie, but here's a little bit of a preview on what Cassie's going to be talking about.
Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed.
We'll play that again.
Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed.
Cassie, what's your thoughts on the Big Ten tourney?
So the thing that really stood out to me was the IU pitching staff, which has consistently pounded the zone all season long, just could not find the zone. And it was all of the pitchers at one point or another just about had trouble. Regular season, 64% of the IU pitches were strikes. Big Ten play, 63.7%. So right up there at the season average. In losses on the season, it was almost 63%. In wins, it was 64.5%. Big Ten tourney, it was 58.8%. That's a sample size. That's a big drop. It was consistent throughout the end. We struggled to find the zone. And I'm thinking that doesn't translate too much to the regional. I'm thinking we're going to be more in that, at least that 62-63%. And that does make a big difference. I mean, even just that Illinois game with walking a couple guys and then letting Spillane get a hold of one. It turns it from a solo shot to a three-run bomb. So I really think that the pitching staff finds the zone in Texas and does well.
Well, I think they're going to need to because, again, I think your analysis of the Big Ten tourney, your preview about giving free runs in that park came back to haunt Indiana. I think you were absolutely right. And now you're bringing that errors in one game and then the walks in another game, and you got to make people beat you in that big park. It'll be interesting to see how the ball plays in Texas. You would think that there's a chance for a little more home runs,
yes.
Which, Cassie, your walk situation definitely seems like something to be concerned about. Chris, your thoughts on the Big Ten tournament?
Well, for me, it was like the good, the bad, and the ugly. I used to play in the softball team. That was the name of the team, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And GBU, for sure. That's what we called ourselves. And this was really all three, right? We had the good. We had down 5-0 in about the sixth inning. We'd come back and win the game. We got the bad, for me, was the hitting with runners in scoring position. We had chances. You know what I'm saying? It was disappointing what happened. And the errors were ugly. So you had your good, your bad, and your ugly. It was very disappointing. I left that third game definitely with a sour taste in my mouth. I'm glad we get to rev right back up Friday and go because, I don't know, it didn't seem like we were sharp. We weren't on point. Execution wasn't there. It was disappointing.
You brought up a couple things that bothered me a little bit too. Which one, the errors or the runners in scoring position, concern you the most going forward as something more likely to unfortunately continue?
I would say that because of who the errors were from, I'm going to say runners in scoring position because I don't expect Jeremy Houston and Logan Sowers to make errors like that again. But runners in scoring position have been an issue all year. So we have to take advantage of the guys we get on base. And we just didn't, you know what I mean? And it was disappointing. And at one point, I think it was about 14 innings. We had like 2 hits. Then we started getting some hits, and then bases loaded strikeout. We left a ton of guys on before Gorski bailed us out in that game.
We are a power team, and we do like to score runs in bunches with the home run. And we might have to I think we have to – be better offensively. Carl, your thoughts on the Big Ten tourney?
What I saw really was an exaggeration offensively of what the whole season's been like, which is the inability to hit early in the series, the inability to hit the Friday starter and the top relief pitcher. But you follow that up with the ability to come back late on the bullpen of a weaker team, on the second game of the series. And we've seen that narrative play out again and again this season. It just seemed to play out in an exaggerated fashion where it was like, okay, instead of not being effective at hitting, they were completely lost. And then that huge comeback on Saturday. I'm just concerned about the first part of that continuing as a trend into the NCAAs, but I do have a reason for some optimism, which I will get to in these previews. So
this could be back to Carl or to anybody too. What do you do? Do you bunt more, which Wintercoat would not be very happy about, or do you hit and run? What do you do to make sure we're moving runners along and trying to improve what Chris talked about and Carl talked about? I'll start with you, Carl, real quick. What would you do? Would you put people in motion that way, or would you just let people hit?
The hitters are going to have to figure it out, I think. We know they can hit. We know these guys can hit. The thing that looks to me, and at some point it might be interesting if I could get Cassidy to do even more work, because I continually ask her to do stuff. It's like, here, why don't you try this? And she's like nice and happy about it. And I know it's like taking her like 20 hours to dig through this stuff. But at some point, in your free time, well after this season, I would be very interesting to look at stats on days of the series. So how are we hitting on Friday versus how are we hitting on Saturday versus how are we hitting on Sunday? And the reason for that is just, it seems to me that at least just just observing it, that the curve that the team is on, you know, from a pitching perspective, maybe goes slightly down. From a hitting perspective, it's like starts all the way down here and then at some point shoots up. And it's not like, you know, we might be facing guys with like a one ERA better, higher than the last guy, but we hit them as if we started with a guy with a 0.5 ERA and ended with a guy with a 9 ERA. And it just doesn't compute to me. But it seems like, Josh, sometimes, yeah.
Josh, I'm coming to you on the bunting. You know, if you're having a team that's not getting a lot of hits back to back, it would make sense to bunt, get the runner over. If you case, you get a hit, you get a run scored. But to a lot of us, it seems like the bunting has not been executed extremely well, although we have, I think, some decent numbers. Maybe not decent, but at least okay. Your thoughts on bunting as a method of getting the offense going?
Well, I'm fairly old school, as we've talked about in other podcasts. I'm more apt to bunt whenever it's called upon by the book. But it just seems like with this team right now, I don't know that I'd be doing that. I think they're pressing a little bit and free swingers, and if they square one up instead of popping a bunt up to the catcher or right back to the box, maybe that's the thing to do. I don't know that I've seen anything like this recently, so I don't really have a good answer for that necessarily. But I think at this point, I'd let these guys swing. I think they're overthinking it too much.
And the other thing you could possibly do is hit and run. We've been grounding into a lot of ground ball outs and double plays too, after we get a leadoff hit or a guy on base, that you could put runners in motion. But that means you have to have guys who are going to hit the baseball too. If you have swing and miss guys, you could be running into outs.
Yeah,
and as well. We'll see.
Go ahead. And it seems like we strike out quite a bit. Maybe Cass can straighten me up on that. It just seems like we do whenever it matters. So I wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable putting the runners in motion like that either. So I don't know.
We'll see what Limo has. We got to trust in Limo. 3 years in a tournament out of four, not been done at IU. So you got to put trust in him that he's going to figure out how to do that against quality opposition. And kind of off the script, former IU baseball player Kyle Schwarber just went yard about 30 seconds ago. So there's a little bit of live reporting for Indiana. Awesome guys. So we're going to go over to our Limo hats for the Big Ten tournament. And due to some technical difficulties last week, we were going to do an awards and add them up and all that, but we've decided to maybe push that back and just keep going as we have been going. But we'll welcome back Chris Feeney and the Limo hats for this week.
All right. Originally we didn't want them to feel the pressure of the postseason to worry about getting a Limo hat. You know, we want to focus on the game. But, you know, I had a little technical difficulty. I'm glad I'm back today. That was rough. Google Hangouts did not like me. For today's Limo hats for this week, obviously this is the good. We talked about the good, the bad, and the ugly. Well, this stuff was really good. And for the pitcher of the week Limo hat, we're going Tommy Summer. Okay? Illinois, I looked this up, believe it or not. I felt like Cassie. Illinois had 9 runs and 13 hits. That lineup, the previous, 9 runs on 13 hits in the previous 9 innings off our pitching. If you went back to the other game and into and then Tommy Summer shuts it down, okay? So if you added up the Illinois innings and the Michigan State innings, it was 9 runs on 13 hits. Tommy Summer comes in, 2 zeros, okay? No hits, no runs, gives us a chance to come back. It was huge. At the time when it was happening, did I think it was that huge? I'm not going to lie, I really didn't. But when Matt Gorski could tie the game like that, then it was. It became big. And then we're going into the other two Limo hats, defensive player of the week Limo hat, the Tony Butler Award, is Matt Gorski for coming in from left field. Guy on second, saving that run. What a catch he made. Full extension, saved the run. And now he picks up another defensive Limo hat. I believe it's his second. And for the hitting, big surprise here. There was a lot of choices for the Alex Dickerson Limo hat. But we decided to go with Matt Gorski. And that'll be Gorski, and Tommy Summer for, I'm not even sure what week this is. We'll call this the Big Ten week. And, you know, next week we're going to go it again. We're going to have regional Limo hats, and then hopefully super regional Limo hats, and then hopefully Omaha regional hats, Limo hats. And that's all I got.
We're just going to keep giving out Limo hats all the way up until fall. We might have to do fall ball Limo hats.
I'm doing it.
All right. Chris, also, you've been following some high school IU commits. Were there any standouts this last week as a state tourney has started playing here in Indiana? What have you been seeing?
I got to tell you, we had two humongous pitching performances. Now, we have Braden Tucker, 20 strikeouts. Okay, the guy went Kerry Wood on Northview, 20 Ks. The game went 9 innings. It was a 1-0 win, and he scored the winning run. So between his 20 strikeouts and scoring the winning run, you get both. Okay. Then we also had Ty Bothwell, no hitter, his fourth no hitter of the season, 17 Ks in that one. So we had two huge pitching performances. We have seven future Hoosiers still alive when it comes to the regionals, right, for this weekend. I'm just going to read them off real quick. They deserve a little shout-out. Grant Richardson from Fishers, Ty Bothwell from Boone Grove, Michael Dungelberger from St. Joe's. Then we have two future Hoosiers on Columbus East. That's Cole Gilley and Casper Clark. And then we have Sammy Barnett from Silver Creek. And finally, Gabe Bierman from Jefferson. So we have seven future Hoosiers still alive on six different ball clubs. Congratulations to them on their sectional championships.
So be watching for those future Hoosiers in the state tournament. It's a regional time right now in Indiana. So those are some guys to follow.
And you know why?
No.
Because there's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball. No crying.
Howdy, Jimmy.
Well, Carl, there's not supposed to be any crying in baseball, but you noticed something otherwise. What do you have?
What I have is what I'm just sharing here for those and for those people that are only listening to this. It's a tweet sent out by @IlliniBaseball, in which this was done on Sunday, which compares the resumes of Indiana and Illinois, followed by a whole bunch of pictures of Illinois players celebrating their defeat of Indiana. I'm just going to get on a soapbox for a little while. I don't want to disrespect the Illini. We, as Indiana fans, were pulling for the Illini to get into the NCAAs. They did not. They were among the first four teams officially out in most of the predictions and by the NCAA's final determination. We were pulling for them. We want Big Ten schools in regionals. As a conference, we want to bring the rest of our conference. Yeah, we're playing each other. We're rivals, and we're wanting to beat each other. But when it comes time for the postseason, we want to be behind each other. We want to push each other. We want the conference to succeed. And for Illinois to bring this out, you know, left a sour taste in the mouths of Indiana fans and possibly even the Indiana team. Because it's all about, hey, we were better than Indiana. So that's not what it's about. It's about the best team that you can be. And like I would have been fine with Indiana is a consensus NCAA pick, probably a 2 seed. And look, we beat them three times. We beat them 3 times and only lost twice. I'm cool with that. But to have all this, hey, you know, this is their resume. This is ours. Let's show all these cherry pick numbers. That was not cool. We're the Big Ten. The Big Ten needs to back the Big Ten. I will now get off of the soapbox.
Thanks, Carl. Well said. Well said.
The stars at night are big and bright. Deep in the heart of Texas, the prairie sky is wide and high. Deep in the heart of Texas.
And Texas it is, as the Indiana Hoosiers have been selected in the 2018 NCAA baseball tournament. And they will be playing in Austin, Texas, the home of the Texas Longhorns. And we are here now to preview that tournament. Real quick, Indiana plays at 5 o'clock on Friday against the third seed, Texas A&M, from the SEC Conference. That will be televised on ESPN2 at 5 o'clock. The other game is Texas versus Texas Southern. That game is scheduled to start at 9 o'clock. That'll be broadcast on the Texas Longhorn broadcast station if you get that on your cable television. It is a double elimination regional, so you have to lose twice in order to be eliminated. Saturday afternoon at 2:30, the losers play, and later in the evening, the winners play. And after that, the loser brackets get solved until all the way Monday at the latest. If not Sunday, a champion of the Austin Regional is determined. So with that in mind, we're going to give you a preview of the teams. I'm going to start off sending it to Chris with our opponent, the number 3 seed, Texas A&M. What do you have on the Aggies, Chris?
All right, Texas A&M Aggies, the creator of the Bowl 5 chant, many of you know. They've got a wild crowd, and I'm sure they're going to bring a whole bunch to Austin. This is going to be feeling like a road environment. There's no doubt about that. They're 39-20, 13-17 in the SEC. They are 18-1 in non-conference home games, and that's pretty much what this is going to be. So something to look at. They made it to the SEC tournament semifinals. They lost to Ole Miss, but they were in the Final Four of the SEC. They had 3 players on the All-SEC tournament team. Okay, they were the only team from the SEC to get 3 players on the All-Tournament. They had a pitcher, John Dagaksis. He actually had a no-hitter in the Auburn game. It's about the 8th inning. I don't know if we're going to be facing him or if they're going to save him for UT, but I guess we'll see. Chris Andrisis, the first baseman, he had 2 homers and 4 RBIs for the tournament. Michael Hellman, the second baseman, he was also a standout in the tournament. They have a Logan. You know, we got a couple Logans. They have a Logan also, Logan Foster. He leads their team in home runs with 8. Braden Shoemake. He is their average and RBI leader, 329 average, 44 RBIs. They have 7 guys with 5 home runs or more. Okay, this team is deep throughout. This team, I was looking at, I mean, I did the preview for all 3, and I think this is the team to beat at the regional. Okay, their RBI is the best, I know that. They're in the teens. They were just deep throughout. It seems like, okay, they lost a couple series in the SEC, but who doesn't? From what I understand, what's held against them is their conference record in the SEC. But I can't imagine the opposition they're facing, you know what I mean? Now, the other pitcher we might face could be Mitchell Kilkenny. He was 8-1 at one point. He has lost his last 3 decisions, but Florida, Ole Miss, and Auburn, I believe, are the teams. So, I mean, these numbers and what I was looking at, and to have this all in the SEC against their pitching in those teams was really impressive. But Kilkenny's real good. He pitched. They saved him for the Ole Miss game in the tournament, and he went 8 innings. He just gave up 2 runs, and he had 7 strikeouts. So this is a team. I feel like if we were able to steal this one, I mean, this is going to be the hardest team we face. The crowd is going to be wild. No 4 pitch walks because they just riles them up even more. They'll chant the first name every reliever the minute he goes behind in the count. We're going to have to focus. This could be the rowdiest environment this team's played in years, probably going back to Nebraska Big Ten tournament. Because you remember, we really didn't get the real Kentucky crowd last year. They didn't really want to show up for the day game. This is going to be wild. We've got a big, big job ahead of us. And Steve has got to be on point. The defense has got to be on point. There can't be any 4-out innings against this Texas A&M team.
Carl, what do you have on Texas A&M record-wise?
Okay, well, I've got, just like Chris said, they are the highest RPI team in this regional. They're the second highest RPI team that did not get a host seed. They are the highest 3 seed with a 15 RPI. And he is exactly right. It's about that SEC regular season record of 13-17. That same record paired with no tourney wins is what kept Kentucky from even being in the tournament. But as Chris also said, this team went 3-1 in the SEC tourney, and that's why they are still alive. The most interesting thing, and this is kind of where I was alluding to before about the hope piece, is that the one area this team has struggled in has been the first game of a series. IU is 8-7. These guys are 7-8. They have generally lost the first game of the series more than they have won it. So if there is a time to get them, it's now, because you get to the third game of the series. And remember, they're mostly playing the same teams in these calculations. They're 11-4 on the Sunday games or the third games. We're also 11-3. So we're tracking kind of similar to that. So I think it's advantageous that we are in this weird scenario getting them in the first game. That's going to be the big advantage. Now, they get into later in the tournament. If this team manages to, let's say, get into the loser's bracket and then come up deep, they're practically unbeatable. They're 13-1 in midweek games. So I think it's important, very, very important, that we jump on them right away.
And Cassie's going to provide some key and unique stats for each of the opponents that we might face during this regional. And Cassie, start us off with Texas A&M.
So the part that stood out to me was their whip, their walks and hits and pitched. It's just 1.24, which is 18th best in the NCAA. And when you pair that, they have a staff ERA of 3.23, which is not that much worse than IU's at 2.95. So that they're a solid pitching team, but they're really not allowing runners on base. And so that is going to be key. If we can get runners on base and move them around, that's going to be huge against this team. For comparison, IU's whip is 1.27. So just 0.3 higher and good for 25th in the country. And then the interesting stat I found was that while they don't have a ton of stolen bases, they actually have fewer stolen bases than IU does, but they've only been caught stealing 5 times. They're 41 of 46, so they're successful almost 90% of the time. So that'll be something to watch. When they choose to go, they're successful.
And it seems like runs are going to be a premium in that first game with the pitching staff. And so all of our discussions so far about runners in scoring position, bunting, moving runners along, being consistent hitting. The thing that stood out to me real quick was when I looking at the overall stats of the pitchers is most of the starters have more innings than hits, and that's why the whip is so low. But it seems like they have some solid pitching, which seemed a little bit better than the next team that we're going to talk about, which is the host. Texas Longhorns are the number one seed, and the host will be playing in their home park. Chris, lead us off on our evaluation of the Texas Longhorns.
All right. 37-20 for Texas, 17-7 in the Big 12. They were the regular season champs. They did go out 2-0 though in their tournament, so they're coming off a 2-game losing streak. They have, I would think, the player of the regional as far as going into it is Cody Clemens. He's hitting 341. He scored 53 runs, 61 RBIs, 19 bombs, the player of the year in the Big 12. So he's the bat we're going to have to deal with. You know, it's going to be an issue. David Hamilton, 28 steals. Okay, he's going to be moving around the bases. But again, you mentioned the pitching is not the same as A&M. ERA is above 4, above 5. It was hard to really even figure out as far as who we might see, obviously, because we don't know when we're going to face them, if we face them. They could go 2-0. Nolan Kingman, though, seems to be the guy, 7-3. Something I did notice, they go in ruts where they don't score runs. They only scored 3 runs in the Big 12 tournament in those 2 games. And it was a couple of other consecutive games where they might only have a total of 4, stuff like that. But obviously, their crowd is going to be into it. It's going to be another, if we play them, it's going to be another wild environment. And again, not that the Bard isn't great, and not that other Big Ten stadiums can't get riled up, but this is going to be something that this team is not used to. So we're going to have to keep their cool. Got to be on point. Now, with Clemens, pick your poison. You know what I'm saying? If we have to, don't let him beat you, is what I'm saying. Right? Don't be a hero. If you got to put a guy on base, if you just go to somebody else. That would be my opinion on Mr. Clemens. And expect a loud crowd, expect a lot of pressure situations. And, you know, maybe we don't even face the Longhorns. You never know how these things work out.
And, Carl, what can you tell us about Texas?
Continuing the theme of the bizarre nature of this regional, this is the lowest RPI among all of the hosts at 22. They are in this hosting position due exclusively to their 17-7 number one finish in the Big 12. which they at least have the benefit of it being a completely balanced schedule because the Big 12 only has 9 members and everybody can play each other. They did go 0-2 in the Big 12 tourney, but that apparently was not an issue for the committee as they assigned them a host. We are likely to face them in the second, third, or later games. In the second games this year, that's where they've been the weakest. They are 8-6 so far, while we have now climbed up to 11-4 in second games. So second games have been a strength for Indiana this year and not so much for Texas. So that's an area where they may be vulnerable. In third games, they're a little bit better, 9-4, while we are 11-3. They have been pretty strong in midweeks, 12-4, while we've been 8-3. We obviously didn't play as many because, well, we're in the north and we had more games canceled. But that's the host, Texas. Again, just like Indiana, this is a team that kind of gets better as the week gets along. So part of the trick is to get at them early.
Cassie, the key and unique stats for the Longhorns.
Yeah, so Texas, the key stat for them is they don't give up unearned runs. On the season, they've given up just 32, which is actually the same number that IU has given up, but in, I believe, 2 more games, something like that. And this is really important because, kind of going off what Chris was saying, don't have the best pitching staff. They allow runners to reach base, so they're not giving themselves a lot of wiggle room on errors. So they really have to keep up with that. If they start committing errors, it could snowball for them pretty quickly with that pitching staff. And then the interesting stat, kind of going off of that, they've turned 63 double plays on the season, which is good for fourth in NCAA. And they're third in double plays per game at just over 1. So they do have the defense to back their pitching. Their pitching's not stellar, but they do have the defense.
And we hope that we're playing them in Saturday night in the winner's bracket. That would be ideal with the chance to advance to the championship with the win in game 2. And we look forward to facing the Longhorns. The third team is the fourth seed, Texas Southern. Chris, what can you tell us about Texas Southern?
Okay, they have the Tigers, the Texas Southern Tigers. They were 27-26 for their record and 17-6 in conference. Their overall record's only 1 game over 500, but I looked at the schedule. They scheduled hard, man. They were playing a lot of good teams. And, you know, they didn't win that many of them. But once they got into conference, they dominated. This is their back-to-back SWAC tourney title. They have a really good number one, Aaron Solis. Obviously, he's not going to pitch in the second game. He's going to hopefully knock Texas, give them their first loss. And then we'll face their second guy, Peyton Schrider. He's 4-6 with a 5.56 ERA. These guys have a lot of offense. And again, when I looked at the A&M stats, you know, they might not have been so big numbers-wise, but I know who they were playing. Now, this team's numbers are way up, but I also know who they're playing. So we got to, you know, grade it on the curve. Christian Sanchez, 17 home runs, 60 RBIs, hitting .340. Then you got Cameron Dukes. He's hitting .396, 91 hits, 22 doubles, 65 runs scored. And he's also their speedster with 30 steals. So these guys can score too, man. Hopefully we're going to – I know you said hopefully we're playing Texas Saturday. I'd rather play Texas Southern. I'm going to go with that prediction. Tigers and Hoosiers Saturday night at 7. I'm in.
I agree with you on that one. Carl, Texas Southern.
Texas Southern, by RPI, is the lowest RPI team in the entire NCAA tournament at 215th. While Chris was correct about the record, that did include 2 games against Division II schools. So their Division I record is actually 25-26, they're coming into the tournament with a losing record. 17-6 in the SWAC, and they obviously won the SWAC tourney, which is why they are here. And if you look at their game of the week breakdown, it follows along the lines much of what Chris was talking about. Second game, they've been solid, 10-3. They're off a little in a third game. So if we were to face them in an elimination game, we'd be looking at 7-5. Their midweek performance has been atrocious, but that goes right along the lines with what Chris is talking about. They have scheduled a extremely tough midweek rotation outside of their conference, and they're only 2-11 in that. But that's partially because of just the level of play they've been playing in midweeks has been a lot more significant than in their conference week series. But this is a team that overall, the entire trend line, including during series, is that they start strong and get weak. So the goal there would be, if you were to face them, face them later. And the good news is we can't obviously face them first because we're with A&M first. So, yep, that's what I've got on them.
Cassie, Texas Southern stats.
So the key stat for them really is their offense, is their batting average. They're hitting .307 as a team, which is absolutely nuts. They've got a pair of guys who are both above .380 and another one almost .350. Like these guys can absolutely hit. And that's really important for them with a staff ERA of 5.23. So this is kind of a first team to 10 wins kind of a situation. They're going to give up some runs, but they're going to score a whole bunch too. And some of that scoring is going to come from their base stealing. They have stolen. I had to read this twice to make sure I was reading it correctly. They have stolen 114 bases in 144 attempts. That's the sixth most in the NCAA. And if I remember correctly, yeah, they have the fewest games of anybody in this regional at 53. And so their per game average is at 2.15, which is good for fifth in NCAA. So these guys run, they run often, and they run well. So that's going to be a big test for Fineman and Cross behind the plate and the pitchers as well.
Cassie, you have great stats and you have great discipline too, because you didn't read the entire script as it was on the script. Nope. That was well done. The interesting thing from my vantage point for Texas is, what do you do with your pitching staff? I always think you throw your best to get to the next day, but could they possibly throw their number two or their number three and save their guys for later? That's a dangerous scenario, and I know teams do that, but it'll be interesting to see in Friday night's nightcap just what the strategy is with Texas pitcher, what they're going to do. That's always interesting with the 1-4. And, Carl, you can attest to there are some ones that got tough fours and probably will still go with their aces in those regionals. But this one with the lowest RPI, we may see a throw-off game. But it'd be interesting to see. Josh, we're coming back to you now on a little bit of an IU preview. What do we have to do here to come out, and who are the key performers you think for IU to win this Austin regional?
Well, I'm gonna keep it a little more broad than that and just go pitching versus offense. I think obviously on pitching, we have to get back to throwing like we're a team at the top 10 ERA in the country. It's not that they've been bad lately at all, because they haven't, but just maybe not quite as dominant as we have been. We've got four starters who have proven this season they have the stuff to shut down any offense, whether it be Cam, Timmy, Pauly, or John, and just as many in the pen that can do the same thing. I think if we keep it clean in the field behind them, let them settle in, get some confidence, relax, show us what they can do and get back to what they've shown us this season, getting the rhythm, I think that will be a big help to them leading us to a regional title. But I think more importantly than the pitching angle this weekend is going to be the offense. We've been throughout the podcast here, we were trying to hash that out earlier. I think it starts with being patient at the plate. In the two losses this weekend, we had a total of 3 walks. We scored 5 total runs, so I think we need to stop pressing at the plate so much. and start taking advantage of the opponent's mistakes. In the last Illinois game, we lost by one round, and they committed three errors. We had five runs. They were all earned, so that means we obviously had some other opportunities out there that we didn't take advantage of. And in that same game, 1 through 7 in the lineup had a hit, but they were just spread out. We need to start getting some in bunches like we did earlier. And we won a lot of games by getting, you know, multiple or crooked numbers multiple times throughout the game. And finally, I think we just have to get more than one guy going. It's been a while since we've had a multifaceted attack. We have one guy going or a different guy coming through big each game, like Cross and Barr did this weekend. But our lineup has too many guys up and down that are capable of carrying the team. And it's just, I find it hard to believe that we can't get more than one of them hot at the same time.
You know, Josh, that's an interesting point, because this is a talented offense. And we have had some runs of winning streaks, but it seemed like against the better opponents, we have not all been hot at the same time. And this is the time to do it. I have a follow-up for you on pitching, too. It seems like we found some new arms in the bullpen. Some old arms that we relied on have struggled down the stretch. How important is it for all of them to refine their groove in a 3 or 4 or 5-game regional setting, in your opinion?
Oh, I don't think we need more than one or two to click. If our starters do what they're capable of doing, I don't think we need four guys in the bullpen to take care of that, because John and Pauly are more than capable of eating up 7, 8, 9 innings. Then you have Matt or Cal come in, or, you know, I don't think it'll take a whole lot of those guys to click at the same time in the bullpen, as long as the starters get things going. And they're obviously proven, so they can happen.
I agree with that. I do like Selfrank and Tommy coming out of the bullpen. I thought they've started to come on strong. Mm-hmm. And if BJ and Cal can refine what their magic that they had for most of the year, short of a week or two, I like the fact that no matter who we need to go to, again, now's the time for the pitching staff and the offense all to click. Cassie, some key stats for our Indiana Hoosiers.
Yeah, so the key stat that I really, really – that really caught my eye for IU is the staff ERA of 2.95. It's the best in the regional, one of the best in the country. And to give this offense a chance to win it, the pitching staff's going to have to do really well. I mean, the number of times poor Stever has been on the bad end of a 0-2 run output by the offense. So these pitchers, there is a little bit of pressure on them to keep the other team down. The unique stat, and kind of goes off of playing A&M and Texas Southern, between Ryan Feinman and Wyatt Cross, they have caught 46% of the runners trying to steal on them. The next closest in the regional is Texas at 35.5%. And then the other two are right about a quarter of the runners that they've caught. And I tried final national rankings, national statistics for this, and they just don't seem to exist anywhere. But I've got to imagine that catching almost 50% of the runners trying to steal on you, that's got to be way up there. And so when you're facing a team that has 114 stolen bases, or a team that has only been caught 5 times, that could come up big.
And Cassie, you put together some comparison stats of the 4 teams in the regionals. What did you find in those areas?
Yeah, so I kind of looked at 3 different things. I looked at extra base hit rate. So are these teams hitting the ball hard consistently? I looked at free passes, walks, and HBPs, both for pitching and offense. I looked at fielding percentage, kind of trying to get a more well-rounded picture of these teams. And so on the free passes, you and A&M, they just don't free passes. just 10 to 11% of the batters they face. That is really, really low. At the same time, Ann's offense doesn't draw them really well. And right about that 11%, does a lot of free passes at about 15% of their plate appearances. But they give up 14% of their plate appearances are free passes. And Texas Southern just they give up about 10% of their batters faced are walks and HBP. So that, it goes with that same pitching staff issue. So this first game for IU, they can try to get the free passes, and that would be a good thing if they can get them, but it's going to come tough. And that goes both ways. With the extra base hits, A&M doesn't hit a high percentage for extra bases, just 27% of their total hits. And this actually matches what the IU staff gives up. They're within half a percentage point of each other. So that's pretty even, and that's a good sign for the IU pitching staff. IU, on the other hand, hits about 30% of their hits are for extra bases, compared to A&M's staff rate of 27%. So something's going to have to give there. Either we're not hitting as many extra base hits, or they're giving up way more than they normally do. Texas also hits a high percentage for extra bases at 33%, but give up 27%. And Southern is about 25% both. On the fielding percentage, this is a very solid fielding regional. Texas, IU, and A&M are all very solid fielding teams. Texas is as high as 24th best fielding percentage in the NCAA at 977. IU is just 1/100th of a point behind them, and A&M is just 0.03 of a point below that. So those three teams are all right in their fielding percentage wise. The big different one is Texas Southern with just 966, which is 188th in the NCAA. But the big thing that stood out to me is their opponents have a combined fielding percentage of just 956, which would be the equivalent of 274th in the NCAA. So their opponents are really helping them out a whole bunch. And if these other three teams aren't going to commit those errors, that could be rough for Texas Southern as the four seed.
Cassie, good stuff as usual. It leads me to wonder what the approach will be if Texas A&M in that first game is around the plate quite a bit. Will we see an aggressive early swings as opposed to taking pitches and getting behind? But then again, the Texas A&M pitching staff doesn't give up a lot of hits, so I'm sure other teams have been aware of that.
Yeah.
And so they're just solid all the way around. I am a little concerned if they're not if they have really good control, that we get in counts that aren't productive for hitters, that could mean some bad swings, some strikeouts, some of those things. It'll be interesting to see the approach there. Thanks, Cassie, for that. Josh, we're going to turn to you now. If after the regional, the winner goes on to what is called a super regional, which would be a best 2 out of 3, and there are 4 other teams in a different pod. Talk briefly about the teams that are playing in the opposite pot of ours for the super regional and who we might meet up with.
The Austin regional is paired up with the Oxford regional, which is hosted by the number 4 overall seed Ole Miss, the winner of the SEC tourney this past weekend. And that tourney featured 4 of the top 8 national seeds. So you know how strong that team's going to be. The 2 seeds Tennessee Tech, which has a 23 RPI, a near 50 win team, 48 to be exact. They're an at-large out of the Ohio Valley Conference. The 3 seed is Missouri State, who has a 25 RPI. They got the auto bid out of the Missouri Valley Conference. And the 4 seed is the auto bid from the A-10, which is St. Louis. Something to note about this super pairing is that even though they're the 4 seed, if we would get an upset, Tennessee Tech did not put in a bid to host a regional due to the logistics So it's very likely that the winner of the Austin Regional should be in a great position to host this super matchup if there's an upset and Ole Miss doesn't pull it out.
Still an outside chance for baseball at the BART. So we have about six or seven minutes.
Some brackets. I'm going to get the bleachers again.
Yeah, 6 or 7 minutes left in our show. I'm going to ask some quick questions here of the group, and before we sign off, I'm going to come to you, Cassie. Why does Indiana win this regional?
In my mind, IU wins because of pitching depth and the offense stepping up. We need both of those components.
And back to you, Josh. Why does IU win the regional?
Like Cass just said, we have major league level talent at every position on the field almost. We're battle tested. We've been through a little bit of everything this season. We've got so many guys capable of stepping up and getting it done. So we just need a few of those guys to do it at the key moments like Gorski did the other night, and we can get it done.
I think we have to all be hitting on all cylinders. I think that first game is really key. You want to get up in that winner's bracket area and to win that. I'm going to send it to Carl. Why do we lose the regional?
Because we lose one of the first two games. The key is to not just the first game. And the truth is, neither the first or the second game is more important than the other. It's the two combined. You only get to skip a game if you win them both. So it's you got to get all in on those first two games. And you got to find a way to win them. And the struggle Indiana has had has generally been in that first game, and in some cases that second game. Getting both of them at the same time has been a little tricky for this team, and that's the hump they're going to have to get over. Got to try to win the first two.
Chris, coming to you on a little bit of follow up on Carl, what do you think happens if we lose one of those first two games? Do we have the capability of bouncing back through the loser's bracket? And why, if you believe so?
I wouldn't think so, no. I would not think so. If we're not sitting there 2-0 going into Sunday, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm going to root for the whole thing. You know, the team come out of the loser's bracket, but gun to my head, that's not happening. You know, for us to win the first two games, I feel like they're going to have to play at a little level below, and we're going to have to play at a little level above, assuming we play A&M and Texas. Now, we're going to get opportunities pitching-wise, I feel like. But if they make a mistake, we have to crush it. If they make an error, that runner has to score. We have to communicate in the field. Even though the crowd is loud and crazy and everyone's going nuts, we have to play a perfect game where I feel like they could play a number 8 game. Let's say we have to play a 10 game. And to me, that's the reality of the whole thing. We have to be on point both games. And we're not... Honestly, no, I don't think we would come out if we're not 2-0. I think Carl's 100% right. Now, could we possibly be playing Texas Southern on Saturday? I'll root for that. And we go A&M, we go Texas Southern, and then we go from there. But really, honestly, everybody's like, oh, the Texas Regional, what a break. I don't know. I think these teams are pretty good. And I think we're going to have to play above our level, and I think we're going to have to take advantage of every mistake that they make.
Well said, and I agree with you, but I hold out hope that we can Stanford somebody else. You know, we were the number 4 national seed, and Stanford as a 3 seed, I think they were 3 seed, came back through the loser's bracket and won that regional. We have had
– Kentucky also did it last – in our regional that we were in, Kentucky made it out of the loser bracket. So it can but it's going to be real hard.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be real hard. My concern is the Friday night offensive struggle that we've had for a while and against a good pitching staff from Texas A&M. And I unfortunately think we'll lose one of those first two, and then we'll battle and win the second one and possibly win the third one, and that'll put us in the last two situations. So that's kind of where I'm leaning. Any other predictions? We'll start out, Feeney. Your quick predictions. We got about 4 minutes left.
Again, the
right down the line.
The smart money's not on us. I put my gun to my head. I'm taking the Yankees, but I want to be wrong. I love being wrong. So I'll take Texas A&M 100% lock to win the regional.
Cassie.
If IU can get past A&M in game one, I think we win the regional because I think we match up fairly well with Texas and Texas Southern. If IU does not get past A&M in game one, I think we then battle back to face them again in the championship, whether or not we beat them and send it into the Monday if necessary game, I don't know. But I think if we don't get past them, we still have the arms to take out Texas and or Texas Southern.
Josh, your prediction.
Yeah, I'm with Cass on this. I'm not going to be quite as dire as the other men on this panel were. I think if we get Friday, we have a good shot because then that means we're stretching. We're not in the loser's bracket first game, and that means our pitching depth will matter. So I don't think we have to go 2-0 to start. I think we need to go 1-1 at least, or at least get the first one. But I don't know where to go with this, honestly. We have it's a winnable regional. The place will be packed. The atmosphere will be electric. They love their baseball in Texas. Mom and Dad were there last year at a regular season game sitting next to Roger Clemens, and the place was packed on a weeknight, midweek game. So I wouldn't be surprised with a 2-Q or a 3-game sweep out of this team right now, but hey, it'll be fun. It'll be fun to watch.
Carl, your prediction.
Well, if we were to look at it, I would say there's you're most likely looking at a split for Indiana in the first two games in some sense, which I think could very well lead to, you know, let's say Texas does, you know, take that home field advantage and get into the winner's bracket that sets up Indiana and A&M in the third game. You know, hey, Indiana got a shot at that one. And if Indiana has a shot at that one, I think Texas is beatable for the last two. So, you know, hey, Texas and Indiana. Indiana has to beat Texas twice. The odds would be in Texas, but you know what? Indiana can possibly win that.
I'm going with Indiana. I did so in the D1 baseball bracket challenge. I know you're all going to be in there, so you know my pick. I'm going with the Hoosiers. Can't pick against them. You're all crazy. I love you, but you're all crazy. Go Hoosiers all the way. If you're interested in joining our iubase.com bracket challenge, check out the article that was written on iubase.com. I don't think you have to subscribe to the D1 website to join the bracket challenge. We might need to get an email to you or something like that. Check out iubase.com for that and all kinds of great coverage this week. All of these awesome people are doing great jobs on that website every day to bring you up-to-date information on our Indiana baseball Hoosiers. So that'll do it for Talking Hoosier Baseball. Please find all of our future podcasts on Sports Talk with Tonsoni, which can be found on your favorite podcast source, as well as under the Talking Hoosier Baseball tab on iubase.com. Please follow iubase.com on Twitter. Handle is at iubase17. Follow this podcast at the Twitter handle of at CUatTheBart, and visit, as I said earlier, iubase.com to see everything you will need about Indiana baseball for the Austin Regional and beyond. So for the gang, I'm Brian Tonsoni. Go Hoosiers. We'll see you when you come back from Austin victorious. Hey!